Hi, this is Chris from PleasureMechanics.com. Welcome to the Speaking of Sex podcast. On today's episode, we are joined by a special guest, Cooper S. Beckett. Cooper is the founder of LifeOnTheSwingSet.com and host of a Swinging and Polyamory podcast. He's also written two books about swinging, and we've had him on the podcast before on episode 172 to talk about swinging and polyamory. But today we're going to be talking about something a little different. We're going to be discussing male bisexuality and why this sexual orientation is so commonly misunderstood. We're also going to be looking at how opening up our minds to male bisexuality actually benefits all of us and helps us understand the beautiful diversity of true sexual orientation and desire. So here we go with our interview with Cooper S. Beckett. Enjoy. Cooper, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure.
So I wanted to talk to you about male bisexuality. There's not a whole lot of public figures who talk openly about being bisexual as a guy, but you do, and you're very outspoken about it. And so thank you for being a voice. And we're going to talk a little bit about your personal bisexuality and then also kind of what you've learned through all of your work in the sexuality community about male bisexuality as a whole. Does that sound good?
Absolutely.
So let's start with your personal story. When did you first identify as bisexual, and how did that come to be? And were you straight first?
Well, I'm one of, many, many men who had inklings throughout my life about curiosity with men and had a lot of self-loathing attached to that. And also, I was really overwhelmed by the idea because, you know, there's a lot of attempts to eliminate the idea of bisexuality, both straight people and gay people tend to minimize bisexuality to the point where I've been told by gay men that I am gay. Yeah. It'll just take time.
Right.
Yeah. I used to really believe that that might be true, and it was a daunting prospect, and not because there's anything wrong with being gay, of course, but because if I actually was gay, that was such a fundamental shift from what I believed about myself and my identity and my moving through the world that it was a terrifying prospect.
So how old were you when you were having these feelings and having these conversations? Was it in your 20s or 30s?
No, I would say just after high school, college.
Uh-huh.
And then I got married. And so...
To a woman. You know,
yeah, to a woman. Mm-hmm. And so there was... I just repressed all of it and then became the guy who was trolling... gay chat rooms for fun, and then with, you know, self-loathing. So in a moment, I could have been one of those Republican senators.
And do you feel like that self-loathing came from the cultural homophobia at large and this idea that to be gay was so scary and a bad thing, and so that needed to be repressed? Or was it the mismatch of your internal identity with what you were living?
Oh, I'm sure it's a little of both.
Yeah.
And then also even when the idea of bisexuality would come up in my head, maybe I'm just bisexual. It was, no, that's not really a thing. Why am I trying to fit into an idea that's not real? It's just I'm kidding myself and all that. So, I grew up Catholic, so there was a lot of shame everywhere.
So what was your process of claiming this identity? Because you now celebrate it so publicly.
Mm-hmm.
How did you go from that internalized homophobia and self-loathing and kind of shameful late night explorations online to being a leader of a sexual community and publicly celebrating your sexuality?
Well, it's swinging did it.
Uh-huh.
Because when my ex-wife and I opened up, she discovered her bisexuality.
Uh-huh.
And very quickly, became a much more fully realized sexual being. So it was very clear that bisexuality for her was this missing portion of her life that she'd never been able to explore, and how valuable it was to her. And with that success story in front of me, I thought, well, okay, we're in this thing to explore, so I really ought to explore.
Mm. And you tell more of your swinging story on episode 172 when you were a guest. And folks can find that at pleasuremechanics.com in the podcast archive. And definitely go back and listen to that and listen to Cooper's story about swinging and ethical non-monogamy, because that is a must-listen-to episode. So what do you think are the most common misconceptions about male bisexuality? You started talking about the idea that it doesn't even exist. Like, why do we embrace female bisexuality and not male bisexuality? And what are some other myths?
Problematically, a lot of this has to do with the really privileged maleness in our society. And to emphasize further, I think the reason female bisexuality is celebrated is at its basest point that it is something that the hetero male wants to see.
Yeah, gives and, access to men.
Yeah. And the hetero male is loud enough and enough of a media draw and pushy enough to sort of conjure this semi-safe space for female bi-exploration. And I say semi-safe because it's not actually safe. Because the moment they start doing it for their own pleasure, then it becomes a slutty thing.
Yes.
Or damaged, or... We all have seen this, and it's kind of horrible when you break it down to its base elements. And unfortunately, I think the reason we don't see more bi men is because, again, of generalized straight society. Because, you know, if you look on any swinging dating website, you're going to see phrases like, no bi men because... I don't want him looking at me or touching me. Uh-huh. And it sort of assumes this idea that a bi man suddenly loses all concept of consent and generalized human interaction. And what I sort of realized about it is it's because straight men have been told that if you ask for something enough, you'll probably get it from women. They've been conditioned that all you have to do is say, come on, you'll like it, come on, just the tip. Mm. And eventually, she might give in. Mm-hmm. And the worst possible thing for that straight man to encounter is another man who wants to fuck him, who's going to play that same game with him. Wow. So straight men are terrified of being bullied into gay sex.
Do you think they're also terrified of their own residual desire? Like they might like it a little too much and that scares them. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm firmly in the camp that really only a small portion of our society is hetero and homo. Uh-huh. And really the rest of us are some nebulous middle ground here. Uh-huh. And, you know, the idea that it's first of all a binary is oppressive, and then the idea that bi is sort of somehow middle ground instead of this wide, vast range. Like personally, I say I have no interest in dating a man, but mostly what that means to me is that I have not met a man that I have any interest in dating. Right. Because I will not close a door, because why? Uh-huh. But I am very interested in having sex with men. So I am further to one side of that spectrum. Yeah. than I would be if I was similarly interested in dating men and women. And accepting that there is a wide range to this, that you may only be interested in getting together and giving another man a hand job, and that's okay, that that's what you want.
Right.
You know, a lot of people look at that as repressed homosexuality. And I think the danger in saying things like that is that it's negating the grayness of everything.
Mm.
And in increasing invisibility, because if everything is repressed homosexuality, then there's no bi.
Right. And it creates so much shame for so much people and confusion where there doesn't have to be.
Whereas, and then they lash out and create bathroom bills. I don't know.
Right. So
I'm fairly political today.
I don't know. Hear you. I mean, there's so much in the news that's making us sex educators ripple with rage.
I know.
So you are part of the swinging community. So this question is a little tricky for you, but I'm going to put it out there. So a general myth about bisexuality is that they can never be satisfied with one partner because part of their desire will then always be unmet. So you work with this by having multiple partners. If someone wants to be monogamous and is also identifying as bisexual, how do we approach that kind of perceived paradox?
It is a perceived paradox, isn't it? And I admit that I struggle with the idea all the time. It's a car parked in a garage is still a car.
Hmm.
Never needs to drive again. It's still a car. I personally have a problem with the idea that anyone can be happy with one person for their entire life.
Hmm.
It doesn't mean to me that everybody will cheat or needs to be non-monogamous. I just fundamentally don't believe that we are all happy with one person.
Mm-hmm.
So bisexuality really feeds into that idea. I think it would be significantly harder for a bisexual person to be happy in a long-term monogamous relationship. But I believe it is possible, and I believe there are people who are happy that way.
Right, like bisexual or kinky or, you know, there's all sorts of desires that may not be fulfilled by your one primary right. partner, and you kind of make that choice. Like, is that willing to be negated in order to commit to this relationship, or are there other ways we can work with it through fantasy or online exploration? Or
indeed.
Yeah.
I just think being bisexual is like fundamental identity.
Uh-huh.
And such a fundamental portion of an identity, it just, I applaud anyone who can do it, but I don't see a way.
More fundamental personally. Than being kinky, say?
Well, kinky, you know, you can, I mean, if your partner is not into it, I do believe eventually that ride is going to break down. I think ultimately if there's anything that is fundamentally true about you that you are not able to do for the rest of your life, I don't see sustainability there. I think eventually you will act out, cheat, all these things that we do as monogamous heteronormative couples, because ultimately, the people who are cheating are unhappy with their home life or just simply need the wander. You know, wanderlust is huge and it's really hard to repress. And anything repressed will eventually explode.
Hmm. And so are you suggesting swinging and ethical non-monogamy is in one function of it is to be kind of a pressure release valve?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Because it's accepting a truth about ourselves.
Hmm.
You know, the one of the biggest, to segue, one of the biggest lies we tell ourselves in society is when we meet that perfect person, we will never lust after another, ever.
Right.
And we all know that's not true. And so the fact that we continually tell each other this lie just perpetuates a system where we will get desperate and cheat. By and large, I mean the percentage of people in the country who cheat, it's astounding.
Right.
If we were able to talk about sex like grown-ups, as a culture, not just as a couple, we would recognize this and figure out that there has to be other ways of releasing this pressure that are not just torpedoing your relationship.
Yeah.
And I think swinging is, and I mean, I see it as a lifestyle. It is something that I cannot imagine living without the freedom and flexibility that non-monogamy gives me. But it doesn't have to be a lifestyle. It can be a thing. It can be that pressure release. It can be that valve. It absolutely.
And again, folks, go listen to the ethical non-monogamy conversation I had with Cooper in episode 172 if you are interested in more about this. Swinging is one of your primary communities, and I'm curious, was having community important to you as you started experiencing your bisexuality?
Yes. I knew one other bisexual man, and we were very close, and so I didn't want to explore the bisexuality with him because I was concerned about what might happen if I didn't enjoy myself, and it led to hurt feelings or shame or any of the other surrounding things there. And my first bisexual experience was rather shitty, in fact. It was a Craigslist meetup. And it was with a guy who grossly misrepresented himself. And left me feeling just, I don't like to say dirty, but it left me feeling dirty.
Yeah.
You know, it left me feeling dirty, and I felt that shame. And I luckily recognized that was the situation, not the person, not the acts. And also recognized that maybe I wanted my partner to be involved in it. And that was an important realization, because every time I've had a bisexual experience with women involved, it has been fantastic. And the one and only time I've done it twice without, and both times just left me, guys are different than women. And I know how to have a sexy date with a woman. And maybe it's just that I don't quite know how to have a sexy date with a man, because it became a lot of, we're standing across the room, taking our clothes off. Then we sit down and start playing with each other. And it felt very perfunctory to me. And I didn't know that maybe that I'm doing it wrong. And I welcome people telling me I'm doing it wrong. But ultimately, I much more enjoy groups, situations with other men.
Right. So I wanted to ask that. So your primary pleasures of bisexuality are in threesomes or moresomes with women involved as well?
Yeah.
Both at the same time?
Yes. Or very near proximity.
Uh-huh. What else do you want the world at large, our listening community, to know about male bisexuality?
That it's not scary, that it exists. I try not to say that partners, female partners, have a responsibility for getting their male partners to admit to bisexuality, because I think females have way too much responsibility heaped on them. But what allowed the rise of acceptance of female bisexuality was the strong and overwhelming announcement by the world that we want to see this. And I firmly believe that men would be a lot more comfortable exploring their bisexuality if they weren't terrified that their partner would see them as less of a man.
Right.
We have all this bullshit wrapped up in masculinity and what it means to be a man. And unfortunately, that not only keeps us from exploring, but keeps us from talking about it.
Yeah.
Because what if I say something and my wife says, well, let's get a divorce? And most of the women I know in non-monogamy not only are cool with it, but find it incredibly hot to see two men together. And I didn't know that until I started playing with men in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, why didn't you tell me this? Like, well, I didn't know what you'd think. It's like, well, okay, we need to all use our words.
Right. And again, there's a gap between what women do in private and then how they react publicly, because women, a lot of women love watching gay porn.
Mm-hmm.
But if they find their husband watching gay porn, you know, because there's hysteria. Then
they will assume they're gay and have been lied to and all that. It's the paradox.
And the fragility of so many marriages.
Yeah, indeed. Because of lack of communication.
Mm. So one more meta question.
Yes.
What do you want men to know about sexuality in general from all of your years now of talking about sexuality? What's your message to men right now?
Oh, the biggest one I can give anyone is that if you decide to explore tonight and you suck a dick, you know what? If tomorrow morning comes and you're like, I didn't like that, you never have to do it again.
Mm.
And you're still not gay.
Mm.
I mean, unless you are gay. Here's the thing. If you wake up the next morning and you never want to have sex with another woman again, and you only want to have sex with men, then you might be gay. If you wake up the next morning and you're not interested in doing something again with men, or if you are, but you still want to have sex with women, you're not gay. And nobody's going to force an identity on you. That's the other thing. Is we have this idea that everything will change. And it's because we have a lack of a sense of self that this is who we are. And today, if I'm a man who likes to have sex with women, and tomorrow I'm a man who likes to have sex with women and maybe occasionally play with a penis, I can still be straight, or I can be bi, or I can be pan, or I can be omni. I can be however I choose to identify on that spectrum.
And you get to be more you, which is the essential
thing. You learn something about yourself.
Yeah.
And that is the most tremendous gift we can get in our lives, because so often when we become adults and get married, there's nothing more to learn.
Mm.
And if we learn something about our sexuality, whether it be that I like exploring with men or that I don't, either way, we know something more about ourselves, and we are more complete human beings for knowing that.
Hmm.
And I think that's tremendously valuable. It's scary, I admit, but it's tremendously valuable.
Beautiful. And you have so much to say about sexuality, and you have given us the gift of putting a lot of that wisdom into books. Can you tell us more about where we can find you online and your books?
I've written two books, a memoir called My Life on the Swing Set, Adventures in Swinging and Polyamory. And that can be bought at mylifeontheswingset.com. And that is about my first 5 years of exploration as a non-monogamous being. First swinging and then slipping into poly. I also go into my divorce in the book. And my newest book is called The Life Less Monogamous. It's a novel about newbie swingers exploring the big, scary, hedonistic world of swinging. And that can be purchased at alifelessmonogamous.com. All my stuff can be found at coopersbeckett.com, and I am host of Life on the Swing Set, a podcast about swinging and polyamory that just celebrated its 6th year in existence, and you can find that at lifeontheswingset.com or at swingset.fm with our other sexuality podcasts. I'm also prepping an intro to swinging course, so if you're curious about swinging and you want to be handheld and guided along through the beginning of it, you can check out and sign up for information about that course at introtoswinging.com.
Awesome. I'm excited to hear more about that. Thank you so much for joining us, Cooper.
Oh, my pleasure.